If there was one word to describe your experience and history with Shannon, what would it be?
One word, I think, is mind-blowing. Two words or one word?
One, well, you can put those a dash in between them.
Yeah. And the reason why I'm saying that is, like, my first project took a year to do. And it really was like a week project, if that. It was such a simple project. But it clicked. All of a sudden, my whole world got flipped upside down. Philips came in and corporate mandated we all go through Six Sigma training. And now here I am working with these 14 engineers that are really good chain and problem solvers. And we were just really upset because we were getting pushed to go X to Y when we just had some crazy success going Y to X. But our Red X master came in and said, hey, it's easy peasy. I'll show you how to fit the chain and tools into the Lean Six Sigma structure and you can utilize them.
Welcome to Why They Fail, the podcast that pulls back the curtain on why continuous improvement efforts fail. Buckle up, because we're not here for motivational fluff. We're dissecting the short-sighted decisions and leadership agendas that sabotage CI success. But don't worry, we'll clue you in to the few simple keys to success to avoid these pitfalls. If you're ready for the truth, let's do this.
Welcome to Why They Fail, the podcast that explores the world of continuous improvement. I'm your host, Kevin Clay. Today, we're diving deep into a powerful yet surprisingly little-known methodology that was actually a precursor to Six Sigma. Have you ever heard of Shannon? My guest today, Brian St. Pierre, is an expert with over 25 years of experience in this unique approach to problem solving. He was introduced to Shannon Red X problem solving early in his career and found it so game-changing, it completely flipped his understanding of the process. We're going to explore what Shannon is, how it was secretly the backbone of Motorola's famous quality revolution, and its incredible role in ensuring the reliability of the Apollo lunar module. Stick around as we compare Shannon directly to Lean Six Sigma to find out what makes it so effective for the world's toughest technical problems.
Okay, we have Brian St. Pierre here today to talk to us a little bit about his history in Lean Six Sigma and his history in knowledge methodology called Shannon. Shannon was, I've come to find out, a precursor to Six Sigma. We met for dinner one day. We live in the same area. And he told me about this methodology called Shannon kind of the background behind it. So without further ado, Brian, tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us a little bit about this Shannon methodology that we had a pretty long discussion about.
My name is Brian St. Pierre. I work for Philips Medical Systems, and I was introduced to a methodology called Shannon Red X problem solving 25 years ago. And, you know, basically was straight out of college, grad school, knew everything, and was complete and total skeptic. So I wasn't the best student. Took me a year to do my first project. And like something just happened that flipped me upside down. Like everything I learned about problem solving from day zero to a current was all wrong. And Shannon really, if you asked me what I'd be doing 25 years later, Shannon would not even have been on the list, but found a real passion for it. And, you know, I don't know if it's just dumb luck or the way things work out, but I wound up working very closely with Dick Shannon at GE and traveled all over the world with him, teaching GE engineers and production people how to solve the toughest technical problems, and was part of a small group that were called in when crap really hit the fan and they needed some very quick problem solving done. And we were 100% successful in every case and very quickly, where, you know, we worked with great engineers at GE and Philips, and you know, they were stumped for months and years in some cases.
Give me some examples of some problems that you have addressed with Shannon.
Okay, so I try not to give any specific customer product related things out. But I've worked on pipelines that are 10 miles long 12 inches in diameter, exploding.
Wow.
I've worked on some parts of the F-35, and I've worked anything from like kilometer-long pipes, valves the size of this room, subsea valves, and down to the nanometer scale on semiconductor chips. So I've been really fortunate between both companies that I worked for that I got so much experience in such a diverse product line, which comes up often when we do problem solving with Shane, is how can you possibly help us? You know nothing about this product, right? You really don't need to know anything about the product. They have the experts that know about the product. You just need to know problem solving strategy.
Okay. Excellent. So how did you get into Shannon? How did you get into this?
Super dumb luck.
Dumb luck.
I graduated from grad school, was hanging around Penn State University. Out of dumb luck, Phillips has a plant about 45 minutes away. And I was hired at the same time they were kicking off this new thing called Shannon. And Phillips did have an internal program for Shannon teaching and coaching problems. So it's just the timing. Just dumb luck, really.
Okay. And was Shannon before Six Sigma? You know, that's kind of a buzzword now. We followed this methodology called Lean and Six Sigma. But you told me that the precursor was some other methodologies like Shannon.
Yeah. So I know some of the history about it, what I've been told, and I will communicate what I've been told. So I don't know how much of this is urban legend or whether or not this is...
Right.
So Six Sigma came from Motorola's work in the 90s, where they were trying to compete in a very competitive market, and their quality levels needed to be on par or better than the competitors. And we all know that whole journey, they got to Six Sigma quality levels, and they did something very important. They won the Malcolm Baldrige Award. And part of the process of winning that award is they have to communicate to other companies how they achieved what they did. And part of that, and it's probably one of the only publications of parts and bits and pieces of the Shannon methodology, was they had to basically tell how they got there. You've never heard of Shannon. Most people have never heard of Shannon. And we can talk about that a little bit, because you should know that word. Every American should know that word, because he's done some amazing things that we'll get into in a little bit with quality and problem solving. So the way I understand it is that Motorola couldn't really tell exactly what they did. So they came up with Lean Six Sigma. And Lean Six Sigma, the structures are very similar. They have like the same key things, but the attack is completely backwards. What's really interesting about it is my second Shannon class that we taught at TE, one of the guys in the class pulled me over in one of the breaks. And he's like, hey, I want to show you this. He said, I used to work for Motorola in the 1980s, and this is my training book. And he opened the book up, and it was a lot of Shannon material.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know how much of all this is urban legend, but I do know that Dorian Shannon, who came up with the Shannon Redux methodology and founded the consulting group Shannon, he worked for Motorola in the 90s. And if you read the book World Class Quality by Keki Bodhi, and Keki Bodhi's pretty direct at saying, without Shannon, we wouldn't have solved a single quality problem.
Six Sigma has progressed over, since the mid-80s. How did that get in the way of Shannon gaining that renown?
Yeah, so Shannon is really not well-known, and that's primarily because of the IP control they have on their product. So when you take the class, you have to sign a licensing agreement, and you're not allowed to teach it. You're not allowed to... use it outside the company that you've signed the agreement with. So, and they're very careful with their IP, which rightly so, if you take the class and have the opportunity to get exposed to it, some really cool stuff. It really is a game changer. You know, and I know when Shannon comes out and they do their pitches to different companies, right? I mean, it's different. One has to be very careful tiptoeing around the Six Sigma stuff, because really only thing that people have heard is Lean Six Sigma. They haven't really heard of Shannon. Now, if you're in the automotive industry, it's somewhat well known in the automotive industry. Shannon's really big in automotive and defense. So that's why you haven't heard of it. They don't teach it in school.
I think with Six Sigma, there comes certifications. And can you get certified in Shannon?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know what came first, the Six Sigma certifications or the Shannon certifications. So that's law history I don't know about. Shannon has many different levels. The first one is apprentice. And for apprentice certification, you need to complete a project and has to be reviewed by Shane, and you have to take the class, obviously, right? It's pretty easy. There's usually two people on a team, one person a leader, another person team member. They keep the teams extremely small, and that's because through the history of doing this, and even I've noticed, if you have a bigger team, usually there's one person driving it, maybe two really doing all the work, and the other people are just participating. Okay. We will call in people as needed. Like, we need an expert in this, we'll bring people in for sure. But it's really just a compact two-person team. Now, journeyman certification is a whole different ballgame. So in journeyman certification, you have to be the team leader on a project. You have to take the advanced class, the journeyman class. And after that, there's a very comprehensive online test. And after you pass the online test, there is actually an oral examination. And it's pretty grueling. You really need to know your stuff when you're at that level. My students, I grill the heck out of them. I prep the heck out of them when they take this test. They normally walk out, if they're not 90% on the online exam, most of my students get 95 or 100 on the test.
Okay.
It's not a hard test if you know your stuff.
If you were to compare and contrast Lean Six Sigma or Six Sigma and chaining, what would be the differentiators between the two?
Yeah, so I am also a black belt certified ATE, okay. So in Lean Six Sigma. So I've done both, but I find that there's different ways to be certified as green belt or black belt. And there's also like there's yellow belt, but I never had that at GE. We never had that stuff. And then there's MBB. So my experience at GE, the black belt level is very comprehensive. It's not just Six Sigma projects. It's these continuous improvement classes you have to take. And you have to coach, I can't remember the numbers, but it's like you have to do like three or four projects, and they have to be a different type mix of projects.
Pretty comprehensive at GE. Yeah. Yes. And Six Sigma certification over time has been really kind of watered down.
Yeah, and that's something we can talk about.
To get a green belt and to get a certification. And unfortunately, that's somewhat been a detractor for people getting into Six Sigmas. It's funny, I was talking to another one of my guests, Mike Carnell, and he was talking about how in Six Sigma, the emphasis now is certifications. It's not on solving problems, right? So people just want to have certifications with their company, have people certified. And it's amazing to me. We deal with a lot of companies and they just want certifications. And then after we certify somebody the first time for they've finished a project, they don't go on and do another project. So they've lost the biggest benefit of any kind of continuous improvement methodology. And that's having people continuously improve.
Now, even at GE, it was used as a stepping stone for a career path, which is fine. But I think there's a certain subset, which we argued for in my group, that you know, if you're a black belt, you should have to be staying in that role for another year and just knocking out projects, because it takes a long time. Even with Shannon, even my journeyman, they're not ready to go out on their own and start solving problems. They're, we call, consciously competent. They know what to do. They have to think about a lot of what they need to do. Whereas when you get your master certification, which is the next level up in Shannon, and which is really tough. I mean, you've got a lot of work to do as a master. You know, you have to be able to sit in a room and you're not even like, I don't think about what the next steps are in a project. It just happened. It's like, okay, we've done this. We're doing that. A lot of times we don't even have time to write it down.
In Shannon, is there a formal roadmap or is it more of a cognitive roadmap?
No, it's a formal. What, in terms of problem solving or in terms of... But yeah, in the problem solving...
In terms of problem solving, and are there different milestones to that roadmap? You know, in Six Sigma, there's the DMAIC, right? Lean PDCA. So is there a roadmap specifically?
And Shannon calls it factual.
Okay.
So there's like focus, approach, converge, test, and understand, apply, and leverage.
Okay.
So it's a very comprehensive structured approach. And there's like Shannon uses these, I got to be careful. I can't say a lot of stuff because there's IP on it. And I actually had to talk with Shannon before I met you. And I'm like, can I say this? Can I say that? But I will say that they are very open to being on your podcast if there's an interest. I talked to Craig, who's Kaisom, who's the president of Shannon, and said he would absolutely come in and give you an introduction.
That's what intrigued me when I talked to you. I have gone on a journey now to really understand Shannon and the Red X. It's just a toolbox, right? Whatever you want. It just means you have a bigger toolbox. It's solving problems.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I'm glad that there is a roadmap, because without a roadmap, I tend to find that we have variation in the way that we solve problems, right?
That Shannon was the guy that did all the reliability on the lunar module for the Apollo program.
Yes, you told me about that. Tell us that story.
He did work on the lunar module, and he won that contract because of the reliability, statistical confidence that he could give NASA on the reliability of a lunar module. And it did its job, right? In Apollo 13, it became a life raft. It was stressed beyond all the stresses that you could imagine or didn't even imagine. And Dorian's work on that really played a key role in getting the astronauts back, because he had overstressed that lunar module in so many different ways that they couldn't break it.
Wow. Well, we've heard a lot in history about the lunar module, but I didn't put Dorian in that story.
Yeah. So, and if you go on to the American Society of Quality, the highest award that they issue is the Dorian Award, the Dorian Shannon Award. So why hasn't the rest of the world heard about this? It's actually a shame. For me, I'm like, oh, why isn't everyone doing Shannon? But I will tell you that, like, I can go into a company and or I can have talk with people, and as soon as I say the word Shannon, people's eyes roll, like, I'm not, this is the new thing, like, I'm not sure. Gonna do this.
Well, let's do this, because I've got listeners out here that still really don't know what Shannon is.
Yeah.
And I know that there's some proprietary rights, but if you're just on a basic level, help people to understand what this awesome methodology is as compared to Lean or Six Sigma. You know, a lot of people know Lean because it's tangible thing. You can touch it and feel it, although it doesn't really deal with stats, which should. I think it's kind of funny that most people morph towards Lean because they don't like the statistical rigor of Six Sigma, right? And that's probably the same thing with Shannon. So give us a little, you know, a comparison contrast about these different methodologies and how you can pick Shannon.
Yeah. So I guess first and foremost is Shannon is not something you can apply to every problem that a business has.
Okay.
It's power is really in technical problem solving. So
scrap,
give me rework, warranty. Okay. Lean is not the tool for that. Lean is like process flows and waste and processes. And that's a great tool. Like, it's perfect, but it's not the power tool that you need to use for technical problem solving. It's also for problem solving with hidden root causes. So if things are obvious, so your light bulb is out in your house, like, you're going to go change the light bulb, right? It's the experience-based approach. It's the most efficient way to problem solving. When things get really tough, and we've come up with these structured-based approach, Lean Six Sigma, Shannon. But Shannon is something that is really, really powerful. And here's how the way it works. Dorian Shannon realized very early in his career that there's really, even though there could be a million X's that drive the variation in the process, there's one primary driver. And if you look at the Pareto concept, if you knock out the top totem pole on that Pareto, you knock out most of the variation in the process. So it has to do with the square root of sum of squares theory, and you can't add individual standard deviations up. You have to square them and then add them together and take the square root. So if you knock out the biggest issue, you have the biggest impact to the overall variation. And on top of that, it's much easier to find what we call the red X than it is to find the other X's, which Shannon refers to as the pink X and pale pink X and the pale, pale pink X. in Six Sigma world, we're trying to create this giant transfer function and understand everything. But what Shannon realized was, who cares? Like, you knock out the Red X, you may never have to worry about any of those things at all. Now, in a very small, in my experience, I can name like three projects where I had a pink X that was in equal magnitude as my Red X, but I couldn't find my pink X until I knocked out the Red X. And then, oh, that's why this other stuff is happening.
To me, it sounds like what we believed in Six Sigma, especially the Pareto concept. I deal with companies, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, but
sure.
When I heard the Pareto concept, that's the most underutilized tool, I think, ever.
Yeah, so Shannon's on the Pareto concept.
Yeah, I go to so many companies, and they want to solve all the problems. And I say, it's useless. You're never going to do it. You got to get down to using something like the Pareto chart or a prioritization tool to get down to the thing that you really value, right? And then when you're in that project, get down to that one thing you can really manage to fix. And I think you're calling it the Red X, right?
The Red X is the factor which has the biggest impact, which is really interesting is that the other part of this is where it differs from Six Sigma and any other traditional problem solving is in Lean Six Sigma and all other problem solving, we go X to Y.
Yeah.
We get our experts in the room and they go through what they think is causing the issues. If you look at the results of a fishbone diagram, what's the worst thing that can happen on a fishbone?
I always find the fishbone diagram, they always go back to training. And I actually don't use fishbones or five whys or any of that.
Okay.
I use data. Data. That's the only way I solve a problem. So data is how I Pareto and get down to the statistically significant problems, the things that show up in the data. So I think I'm correlating that to your Red X. I believe that in Shannon that you find the Red X some other ways along
with...
Yeah,
so, we'll talk about that in a second.
Okay.
So the worst thing that you can have in a brainstorming type approach is that the root cause is not on your fishbone.
All right, yes.
And look how much time and energy and resources you've wasted, which are your most valuable things in a company, right? Shannon works backwards. We start with the why. We start with the defect. And we work backwards to use clues in the way the defect is manifests itself to find out what is actually driving it. And they use something called a progressive search. So if you don't understand a progressive search, I have a deck of cards here.
Okay.
It's a real deck of cards. It's not a fake one. I'm just going to pull a card out of here. All right. Make sure I know what it is. All right. You have to ask me questions on what card is in here. I can only answer that with yes or no.
Okay. All right. So if I was to ask you, is it a heart?
I would say yes.
Okay.
What did you just do?
I thinned the model, right?
By like a quarter. So you knocked out 75% of the possible X's.
Right. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Now you can't ask the same question twice. Obviously, you can't ask, is it hard again? But
right.
If you said it, yeah, okay, go ahead. What would be the next
one? I can say, is it a face card?
And I would say no. So now you eliminated, what, four cards of the
right,
art series.
Right, okay. I can say, is it under 7?
And I would say yes.
Okay, and then I could, go, is it under 3?
No.
Is it 4?
Yes. Algorithm got a little sloppy at the end, and you asked the same type of question twice.
Right.
But when we do this in class, we do it with a dictionary. And somewhere in my move, I have packed in my house, I have a 5,000-page 1961 abridged dictionary. And I pick a word out of that dictionary. And I say, you have to ask me questions and figure out what my word I picked. Right. In 11 questions, you should be on the page. In 17 questions or less, you will have the word.
Wow. Wow.
And you do that by splitting the dictionary in half and say, does it become before page 2500? And then once you do that, you keep splitting that dictionary to smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
Chain in the dictionary game works because you understand how a deck of cards is organized, how a dictionary is organized. With Chain in, they have tools to figure out what your problems, your process, or whatever you're working on's dictionary is organized.
And these are qualitative tools and quantitative tools, right?
Qualitative and quantitative
tools. Okay.
Now, here's the real thing that you you mentioned earlier about people getting scared about all the statistics and everything. When I look at the training we do on Six Sigma, it is so complicated. The statistics, normal curves and normality and F-tests and all this stuff, right? You don't need to know it. Chainin's tools are statistically valid. Pass any statistician that looks at them is like, these are statistically valid tools. A lot of them are very complicated, but they're very practical. So for example, on a mini tab gauge R&R, the output is a bunch of numbers, right? And you need to understand what percent study is, percent tolerance, and number of categories, and you got five rules of thumb and all this stuff. When I taught that class, maybe it's just because I'm a bad teacher, but I could spend a day and a half, and if I was lucky, one person out of 100 would walk out of that class with an understanding on how to do an MSA. The same thing, Shannon's tool is graphical. In 10 minutes, I can teach the executive of a company or a person on the floor how to look at the results of a measurement system analysis and understand, is it good? Is it bad? Is there a resolution issue? Is it repeatable? Does it have a bias? It's like, it's so easy. You just look at it. It's graphical. You can understand it. Practical, which is, you know, Six Sigma. I can even show the output of a Six Sigma to people who've had it in the past. Do they remember? 9 times out of 10, they don't remember what the rules are.
Okay, so you've taken something that is it's a little more complex and made some kind of a graphical representation.
Right.
Okay.
Super easy to understand. We do a lot of DOEs. So, you know, the one thing that I do want your viewers out there to do is be very careful. If you go online and you look up Shannon, you'll probably find Shannon's website, I hope. But on top of that, you will find these crazy articles that like really bash the methodology. There's one out of Canada that I know is crazy. Like it says you have to have extremely large samples and high volume operations. Absolutely not. I have worked many projects with a single part. I've worked many projects with millions of parts. It is what it is. It's your part of your dictionary. You just figure out what you can leverage, right? There's articles in there that you'll find like, oh, it doesn't handle interactions. Where did that come from? I work with interactions all day long. So, I don't know where this stuff comes from. So if you really want to understand Shannon, especially if you're with a business and you're interested in doing this, give them a call and they will set you up with someone that will give you an overview of the methodology. And it's a game changer. Like it will change the way you do problem solving.
I've learned a lot from our conversation and this one, but I can see where there are some similarities. But it's funny, in Six Sigma, there's so many different variations of Six Sigma that it's, again, it's become kind of watered down. There are black belts that I've met out in the world that know nothing about statistics. I mean, they have no clue. They can't do a DOE. Most of them don't really even understand the term capability, right? And they're black belts. So it's so easy to get a certification and add that on your resume and get into a company and really do bad things. So I like the fact that Shannon's got an IP and, you know, that it's the integrity is still there. What I hear from Shannon that resonates to me is I think the Pareto chart is one of the most important tools in problem solving ever. Because again, I go into companies that they want us to solve the large problem, the big problem, you know, solve world hunger. And we say, yeah, you can't solve world hunger. You need to find out with your data, where is that one village in one country, you know, that seems almost too small or insignificant to even care about.
Yep.
And make the change there. And you can use a Pareto chart to even get you down to where the input is.
Yeah. So the two ways that I communicate that, especially when I'm into a new company or a new plant, like if you look at any business, what are they in the business of making? They're in the business of making money. Even though they make products, they're there to make money, right? So what's the biggest thing that they want to work on? Well, the biggest thing that's costing them in their plan. So when you Pareto out the scrap or rework or warranty, we also weigh in customer complaints because that might not be the biggest issue for the plant, but it is for future sales and for the future of the company. So we weigh that in as well. But that's one of the biggest selling points is that There's a whole management class that Shane inputs when the plant goes through, wants to do training in the class. They put their management through this executive leadership class so that they know how to sponsor projects. And a big part of that is this rolling top five project selection, which is pretty slick because everything's prioritized on this rolling top five concept, right? I work with one plant now they can pull on the fly a rolling top 10 of all their scrap rework issues in their entire plant. Like I just hit a button, Power BI just spits out everything for that.
Amazing. Is there a kind of a management level version of Shannon and Lean? There is tools that you can use to prioritize projects, Hoshin Kanri and Sigma, in a lot of the other tools. But it sounds like Shannon's more of a specific problem solving tool. Can it be rolled up into, an organizational process?
So Shannon does not only do production problem type solving. They also do reliability stuff. They have something called resilient engineering. So if you're familiar with the Humvee replacement, is a new vehicle that is being made by the U.S. military. Well, there was a battle for the contract on that with Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and a company called Oshkosh, which makes cement mixers. And they make, all the companies had to build, I think it was like 100 vehicles or whatever, and the military beat the living daylights out of them. Well, what they did was Oshkosh hired Shannon to do the reliability of the electronics package on those vehicles. And Shannon crushed it. And they sent those vehicles out to be destroyed by the military. From what I understand, it was hands down, like, Oshkosh vehicle was amazing. And they won this, $500 billion contract for the Humvee replacement. And then Northrop Grumman and Lockheed Martin wanted to sue him. They actually tried to sue him for their vehicle. I don't know why they were trying to sue him, but anyway, that's... And then they also have this thing, I think they call it something different now, but it used to be called transactional. It's business process type approach to problem solving. I'm not trained in it. I don't know too much about it. On their current slides I have them up on my other screen, it's called detail, but I might be wrong on that. Anyway, it used to be called transactional when I saw the slide last time. And then resilient engineering is their whole, it's basically DFSS on steroids, if I had to describe it. Anyway,
and DFSS, for those that don't know, that's designed for Six Sigma. That's more of a looking forward in a process, designing it rather than the DMAIC, which is more of reacting to a process. There seems like a lot of similarities between the two. And again, I'm interested in the precursor to Six Sigma. So I think we talked about that a little bit. So again, Shannon, the Red X is really about finding that significant process or input that is really causing the problem and to be able to find it quickly. I heard stories from yourself and some other people that I've found out that practice Shannon, being able to find those problems, I mean, amazingly quick.
Yeah, the expectation to be able to make one dictionary split a day. Now, most projects get solved in 7 splits or less. And so we're talking less than 2 weeks for a problem. Now, my record is 15 minutes on a 30-year issue. The F-35 one took me 2 hours.
These are complex problems.
Yeah. This is funny, the word complex, like, I don't know what that means because if teams have been working on it for months or years or decades in some cases, right? it's complex, right? It's a complex problem. But when I solve the problem and show it to management, they're like, well, that was easy. We could have told you that. Okay, then why did you hire me to come in and fix the problem for you?
It's amazing.
And the thing that really comes down, I think Dick Cheney, and I heard him call it like uncommon common sense. It's all common sense, but it's not uncommon to see it being used that way.
If you had a 10-second elevator speech on Shannon and you're sitting in the elevator and somebody asks you, you know, what is Shannon? What would you say?
You know, I get asked this a lot, but I get asked to do a one-pager on Shannon. And I've been trying to put a one-pager together for, I think, 15 years. It's not possible.
It's just in it, huh? Well, let's do this. If there is one word to describe your experience and history with Shannon, what would it be?
One word. I think is mind-blowing two words or one word?
One. Well, you can put those a dash in between them.
And that's a wrap on our deep dive into the Shannon methodology. Brian, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing this information with us. It's incredible to learn about a problem-solving strategy that has been a game changer for companies like GE and Philips, yet remains largely unknown. The key takeaway for me is how Shannon works backward from the defect, using a progressive search to find the one dominant root cause, the red X. It's a fascinating contrast to traditional methods that often start by brainstorming a sea of potential causes. And the fact that its tools make complex statistics graphical and practical for anyone to understand is a huge advantage. It really highlights the importance of focusing on solving the problem rather than just getting a certification, a topic we know is a major reason why so many continuous improvement efforts fail. Thanks for listening to Why They Fail. If you found this episode valuable, please consider subscribing to our YouTube channel. It's a completely free way to support what we do. Make sure you're following the podcast on both Spotify and Apple so you get every new episode instantly. And if you have a moment, please leave us a 5-star review. It helps us reach more people who are passionate about making real, sustainable improvements. We'll see you next time.